Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now, on to the episode. Welcome back to another episode with me, your host, Francesca. Wishing you a very, very happy new year. I hope you had a restful break over the Christmas festive season and that your new year has started off well. So today's episode is actually something that is one of the most frustrating and confusing parts of perimenopause, and that's weight gain in your 40s, particularly around the middle for many women that they struggle with, that stubborn weight gain. And so I thought this was quite a timely episode, because obviously when we move into January, we always see so much stuff online on social media about this diet, that diet, weight loss, get in shape. It's crazy how we're still being bombarded with all of that stuff every single January, and the message isn't shaping up any better than it has been, which is just eat less, move more, do this, buy this plan, etc. And so I wanted to get this episode out in the first week of January in case you're somebody who is struggling and you're just thinking, what is going on? I need to do something. It's got to be drastic. There's all this stuff flying at you on social media and you're just tempted. So I wanted to get in there before you are tempted to do anything drastic, because that is not what's needed. It's not the answer. I'm here to explain today some of the biggest reasons as to why we can become more prone to gaining weight in our 40s and what we can do about it. And it does not include restriction, dieting, deprivation, any drastic measures. So that's what we're going to be diving into today. So if you're eating the way you always have, or if you have been eating the way you always have, you've been exercising the way you always have, you haven't really changed anything since being in your 40s, but suddenly the scales are creeping up or your clothes are feeling tighter, this episode is for you. You're not imagining it. It's not anything you're doing wrong. It's not your willpower. It's your physiology changing, literally, as we move through perimenopause. And once you understand the why, you can work with your body instead of fighting it. And when I say work with your body, do the things that we're going to be talking about today, as opposed to going out trying to find this, you know, the next best diet or workout plan that's just being shoved in your face on social media this January. So first of all, let's talk about the impact of erratic estrogen and the declining progesterone, because those two situations, which is your essentially what perimenopause is, we first see a decline in progesterone. We then start to see erratic estrogen. No longer does it ebb and flow gently like it used to. It now fluctuates wildly. It's on this erratic roller coaster, very high one minute, very low the next, and so on, wildly fluctuating across the month. And those two situations together create this picture of metabolic dysfunction, which is basically a new hormonal picture where we have effects. It starts to impact our insulin sensitivity, so we can become more prone to being insulin resistant, which is a big cause of weight gain. It changes our fat storage patterns, so patterns being, you know, why one of the reasons we can particularly notice it around the middle. It can affect our appetite regulation, cravings, how the body handles cortisol, muscle mass, how we're able to retain our muscle mass or not, and our ability to build muscle mass, and our thyroid function. So all of those things are affected by the erratic nature of estrogen and the decline in progesterone. This is the biological backdrop that makes weight gain easier in our 40s, but not inevitable. And then we've got insulin resistance and blood sugar instability. So these are the most foundational aspect to look at and address. So perimenopause makes us more prone to insulin resistance. And that basically means that your cells, the cells in your body, the cells in your brain, they stop responding to insulin in the way that they should. They basically start to ignore insulin. And the reverse, the opposite of that is insulin sensitivity, which is where your cells are really great and efficiently responding to insulin. insulin resistance, they are now not responding to insulin. And that leads to storing more energy as fat, particularly around the belly. It leads to increased hunger and cravings. It can lead to energy crashes, brain fog, and difficulty losing weight. So that feeling of stubborn weight gain that we just can't lose no matter what we do. And if we have this situation of blood sugar dysregulation and insulin resistance, no amount of dieting and, you know, eating less, exercising more is going to help that. It's not going to change that picture. We need to get in there and address the blood sugar dysregulation. We don't need to go and do some, you know, diet, fasting, extended fasting, and exercise more. That's not going to help the situation. In fact, it's going to make it worse. So one of the biggest things that we can do to address this is looking at our carbohydrate intake. So carbohydrate tolerance starts to change in our 40s. Because of this situation of being more prone to being insulin resistant, which is when the cells are no longer responding to insulin, which is when essentially insulin is asking those cells to take in glucose from the breakdown of our meals, particularly the carbohydrate element of those meals. And our tolerance, our ability to efficiently process our carbohydrates changes in our 40s. So the carbs you handled fine in your 20s and 30s, they can simply start to hit much harder now. They're not really landing in the same way. So if our cells are resistant to the action of insulin and we're still eating the same, say, big amount of refined, specifically refined carbs that I'm talking about, the white flour sources of carbs, like the wraps, the bagels, the pastries, the biscuits, the pastas, these kind of, you know, the breads, the bread-based things. These white flour carbohydrates, these refined carbs, they are just, you know, if you handled them fine in your 20s and 30s, they're just not going to work as efficiently now. Because if our cells are resistant, that means that a lot of that glucose broken down from those refined carbohydrates, particularly if we're having more than like a fist size of the portion of these carbs, that quick release sugar, that glucose, is just going to remain in the bloodstream because the cells aren't listening to the action of insulin. They're not soaking up efficiently that glucose to the body and brain cells for energy. That glucose remains in the bloodstream. Insulin has no choice but to store this excess remaining glucose in your fat cells, particularly around the middle. And that all happens really quickly, which is why we can then be left with hunger and cravings or energy crashes quite soon after eating. And then we're craving maybe some caffeine, usually some sugar, and that cycle is repeating itself all day long. So looking at, it doesn't mean no carbs, it just means looking at the types of carbs. It means we want to be focusing on the right carbohydrates, better sources, and better amounts with protein every time you eat. We don't want to be eating carbohydrates without protein. Protein is the number one blood sugar regulating nutrient. So no meal is a balanced meal without protein basically being the star of the show. So when I say right carbs or better carbs, I'm talking about the fiber-rich, nutrient-dense, slow-release forms. So that includes things like brown rice, wild rice, sweet potato, quinoa, whole oats, beans, lentils, baby new potatoes, preferably with skin on. So these are great, and buckwheat as well. So buckwheat pasta, so pasta made from buckwheat as opposed to regular white flour. You can get noodles made from buckwheat. You can just use buckwheat groats and cook them in the way that you would cook rice. And so these types of carbs are the better carbs. They're slower releasing, they're full of fiber and nutrients. And then if we just focus it, just sticking to one closed fist size portion of these carbs with our meals, with let's say lunch and dinner, we don't necessarily need too much carbs with our breakfast. Breakfast ideally should just be protein and fat rich, obviously fiber as well. And then have those carbs with our lunch, definitely with our dinner. We don't want to have a low carb dinner because that does not help us to sleep well. That will really help to encourage insulin sensitive cells. So it starts to reverse or prevent the situation of insulin resistance. So protein as the star of the show, plenty of good fats with your meals, plenty of vegetables, different color vegetables, dark green leafy veg. That's all for your sort of fiber and other nutrients coming from those different colorful veg. And your fist size portion, maybe two fist sizes, depending on how active you are during the day. with your meals of those better versions of slow release fiber rich carbs. The next thing is, the next factor is declining muscle mass. So this is also known as sarcopenia. It affects everyone, both men and women. From age 35, we start to lose 1-2% of our muscle mass every year, unless we're actively rebuilding it. So like I said, that occurs to everybody. But during perimenopause, that can be somewhat accelerated. We can be more likely to lose, you know, we're already losing 1-2% of muscle mass a year. But with the changes in, you know, the erratic nature of estrogen and then the eventual decline of estrogen, these are muscle mass protecting hormones, progesterone as well. And that can make us more prone to losing muscle mass or not being able to maintain what we've got. The other thing as well is because the decline in progesterone, the erratic nature of estrogen puts us in a more cortisol dysregulating state, that can also increase muscle loss each year as well. Now, the less muscle that we have, our metabolic rate starts to lower. We have poorer insulin sensitivity. So again, another thing making us more prone to insulin resistant cells and more fat storage, particularly around the middle. And we have less strength, less bone protection, and we're slower to recover from illness, from workouts, from overexertion generally. And one of the biggest myths that we're still trying to, you know, bust in this day and age since the 80s is that more cardio does not prevent midlife weight gain. I'm still seeing women going crazy over cardio, trying to get all to the spin classes, buying a spin bike, getting to multiple spin classes a week, boot camp style classes, signing up for HIIT classes or big challenges where you're doing 5 HIIT classes a week, you know, 45 to 60 minutes, working with a trainer who's only putting them through these big intense cardio sessions. This does not prevent or reverse midlife weight gain. In fact, too much of this kind of exercise, it can increase cortisol, further dysregulate cortisol at a time in our life where it's already pretty dysregulated, and lead to the breakdown of more muscle. So these, you know, exercising this way too much and only relying on exercising this way, it can be known as what's catabolic. Catabolic means breaking down, like breaking down of our muscle. It's not building up. We want to do the opposite. We want to build up. So what does work is 2-4 strength training sessions a week. 2 if that's all you can manage time-wise. 3 if you can manage 3, great. That's what I've always done. And then 4 if you can manage 4, amazing. But 2-4. Lifting heavy enough that 8-12 reps of the exercise feels very challenging, with the last few reps feeling even more challenging, like you couldn't do more than 8 or 10 or 12 reps because it's just too heavy. Sometimes we can go down to like 5 or 6 reps or 4 reps, 5 reps, 6 reps, and then we can lift even heavier if we do less reps. But that's what we're basically looking at, strength training as opposed to just cardio and HIIT, or, you know, even dropping quite a lot of those. So many women, in fact, strength training advocates, particularly for midlife women, would advocate these 2-4 strength training sessions per week, and just plenty of walking throughout the week, maybe some gentle yoga, some stretches or mobility work throughout the week as well. And then what also works here to prevent this muscle mass decline and to help you rebuild it again is plenty of protein. So 1.5-2 grams, anywhere between that range, 1.5-2 grams of protein per kilo of your body weight per day, split across 3-4 meals in the day in a sort of 12-hour window, and then prioritize recovery and sleep. So this is where, you know, if we're doing these 2-3 or 4 strength training sessions per week, get that recovery in through the week by way of just lovely walks in nature every day, plenty of good sleep, mobility, stretching, yoga, qigong. Muscle is literally your metabolic organ of longevity. Maintaining and building more muscle mass is one of the most powerful ways to increase your metabolic rate, increase and sustain insulin sensitivity, not resistance, and start to lose belly fat. So again, you know, like I said, no amount of dieting and exercising more that doesn't build muscle is going to counteract this situation. So building muscle, eating enough, balanced meals, getting your protein in every single meal, and strength training is a surefire way to start improving the situation. The next thing is cortisol and chronic stress. This is the silent belly fat builder that so many of us aren't realizing. Your 40s are characterized by lower stress resilience, higher baseline cortisol. And even if we're somebody who genuinely has now in the low cortisol states, episode 66, and go back and listen to that one if you haven't, it's a great reminder of what's happening in our 40s with regards to cortisol. So go back and listen to episode 66. It was the one just before Christmas. And I'm really talking about where we can have high cortisol and low cortisol. But what's really important to understand is that in our 40s, we're essentially in a dysregulated cortisol state. Whether it's high or low is usually just dysregulated. More reactive, our fight or flight nervous system is more activated, and we have that reduced progesterone. Progesterone is calming, it's anti-cortisol. And so basically, whether we have high or low cortisol levels, everything that I just described is helping to encourage the storage of belly fat. So high or chronic cortisol, chronically low cortisol, either way, it's going to be dysregulated. That's going to lead to storage of belly fat. It can also lead to the storage of visceral fat. So that's the type of fat that kind of sits under, in and around the organs. We don't necessarily grab it or see it. But this dysregulated cortisol can also cause that, and high cholesterol as well. So it's just a time in our lives where we really need to be aware of these kind of silent belly fat builders and address them. So again, go back to episode 66, where I talk all about cortisol and stress and ways to support that and bring it all down. But yeah, this dysregulated cortisol state will also disrupt our sleep. It will worsen our blood sugar levels, increase cravings, dysregulate our, it causes fat gain, particularly around the middle, and it blocks fat loss. So many women, once they start pulling back on those types of exercise, improving their nutrition, their nutrient status, helping their body to feel safe, like it's actually fed and it's not continuously running away from a tiger, they find that they start to naturally lose weight from around the middle. So it really does play a big role. And stress isn't just life stress. It includes, as I said, undereating, this overexercising, poor sleep, skipping breakfast, long fasting windows, inflammation, ultra processed food, gut issues, alcohol, you know, late nights, just burning the candle at both ends. So your body reads all of these as stressors, and that can be your hidden reason for weight gain. Which brings us on to fasting too long, skipping breakfast, why this really does backfire in your 40s for most women. This is a really big one that so many women don't realize is contributing to their weight gain. Fasting was incredibly trendy for years, and it can work well for younger bodies and male bodies. But in perimenopause, fasting becomes much more of a stressor. And stress is already higher thanks to fluctuating estrogen and declining progesterone. And most women don't know that fasting is catabolic. I mentioned that earlier. So it basically means it encourages the body to break down tissue, particularly muscle, unless you're doing everything else right to support muscle maintenance. So fasting can only work when you're also building and maintaining muscle properly through proper, well-structured strength training sessions each week consistently, eating enough total calories, so making sure you're not skipping meals and you're not under-eating and you're not dieting. You're eating enough protein with every single meal, anywhere between 1.5 to 2 grams of protein per kilo of body weight, preferably up towards the 2 gram mark. You're sleeping well, you're keeping stress low, you're avoiding intense cardio, overdoing that side of things, and you don't have much stress. If all of those things are in place consistently, really, really well, potentially longer fasting windows can work for you. But if you're already dealing with other catabolic factors, things like undereating, unknowingly for most women, low protein, again, unknowingly for so many women, any sort of caloric restriction, under fat, so under eating on fats, chronic modern day stress, poor sleep, too much cardio, not enough strength training, general undernourishment, any of these things, then fasting is just another catabolic stressor that your body now has to deal with. And this can accelerate muscle loss, slow your metabolism, increase belly fat storage, and worsen cravings. So it's just something to be aware of. There's also research showing that people who fasted and paired it with cardio, so they were doing these longer fasting windows or pairing it with cardio, lost mostly muscle mass. Whereas people who simply ate in a small calorie deficit, so no fasting, if you know how many calories per day you need to thrive on, you may do a very small 5, no more than 10% calorie deficit off that those women lost more fat and preserved more muscle. So they weren't stressing their body out with these long fasting windows. They also weren't stressing their body out with being too low calorie. In perimenopause, muscle is literally everything. If we lose it, our metabolism slows down. If we preserve it, fat loss becomes easier to achieve and we can maintain a healthy weight without much effort. So this is why for most women in their 40s, I always say no to skipping breakfast, fasting into the late morning, exercising fasted. All of these things can raise cortisol more than your body can comfortably handle, really just dysregulating that fire even more. Most women feel and do much better with eating within 60 to 90 minutes of waking, prioritizing protein and good fats with their breakfast. So making sure that their protein intake within 60 to 90 minutes of waking is at least 30 grams of protein, pure protein. Balancing their meals every 4 to 5 hours throughout a sort of 12-hour window. And their fast is a 12-hour window. That is a healthy fasting window, possibly 13 hours if you can do that. But, you know, pushing it any further than 14 hours of fasting between finishing dinner and starting breakfast is stressful for a perimenopausal woman. Strength training, having enough protein in and around those sessions, you're not training fasted. These things stabilize blood sugar, support lean muscle building and maintenance, keeps your cortisol in check, and actually helps with weight loss instead of working against it. The next thing to consider is thyroid shifts in your 40s. So thyroid hormones regulate your metabolism, your energy, your body temperature, your ability to burn body fat, that's excess body fat, your digestion, and declining progesterone plus what's known as unopposed estrogen. So basically, we have estrogen all across the cycle. We only make progesterone in the second half of the menstrual cycle as a result of ovulating. But because progesterone levels are declining, we're either not ovulating, therefore not making any, or we're just not making as much as we used to, it can lead to this. It does lead to this situation of estrogen unopposed estrogen. And that can lead to a slower thyroid output. So your thyroid gland's not as efficient as at producing its thyroid hormone. It can lead to a poorer conversion of thyroid hormone. So basically your thyroid hormone that your thyroid gland produces is T4. That's what it's called. But that T4 gets converted into another hormone called T3, which is a thyroid hormone, but it doesn't come from the thyroid gland itself. Some of it does, but most of it is converted from the main hormone of T4. It gets converted in your tissues. And so this situation of declining progesterone can create issues with that conversion. And T3 is the hormone, the thyroid hormone that gives us all the active benefits of having a healthy thyroid. So if you're gaining weight despite doing everything right, you know, maybe you've listened to everything I've said so far and you're like, no, I'm doing that. I'm actually doing that. I have enough protein. I'm not over fasting at all. I'm only fasting for 12, 13 hours at night. I'm lifting weights. I'm doing all these things. You know, I'm managing stress. I do sleep really well. Then if you're still struggling to lose anything despite all of those things, then I would definitely be testing a full thyroid panel. I've talked about this on episode 65 recently. So go back to that as well. That's the full blood work episode that I've done. So you want to be testing TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. You want to be testing free T4, free T3, reverse T3 if you can get that, and the two thyroid antibodies known as TPO and TG antibodies. That will give you your full picture of thyroid health. The next thing is to consider is sleep and cortisol. So that's your circadian rhythm. This is massively overlooked. I've done separate episodes on this as well. Poor circadian rhythm health basically means we are more likely to be insulin resistant. So that goes against insulin sensitivity. We have more hunger hormones coming out. We have more dysregulations in cortisol. We have increased belly fat storage. We have poorer thyroid function and that thyroid hormone conversion from T4 into T3. We have worse recovery from illness, from workouts, harder to build muscle from your strength training workouts if your circadian rhythm is disrupted. And the key things that disrupt your circadian rhythm, your internal body clock, are late nights, too much blue light exposure at night. So that's predominantly your overhead lights that you might use at night, your screens, TVs, laptops, scrolling on your phone at night. That disrupts your circadian rhythm. Inconsistent sleep times, going to bed, waking up at completely different times throughout the week. Skipping morning daylight. So if you're just not getting out into the daylight in the mornings, quite soon after waking, or just really spending most of your time indoors, irregular eating windows, just eating breakfast whenever, not having set times. The body loves and thrives on consistent routine. So when we have a child, we're never just going to give that child breakfast at any random time. They have set times for breakfast, for their lunch, for their dinner. We as adults also need to be adhering to that because the body loves it. The brain loves consistency and feeling safe and routine. And that's a really key way to regulate your circadian rhythm. It responds to what time we go to bed, what time we get up. It responds to daylight. It responds to morning daylight. It responds to darkness at night. And it responds to regular eating windows. If we have evening meals too late at night and that are just really high in, you know, refined carbohydrates, lots of sugar, alcohol, all of those, that's just going to wreck your circadian rhythm. If you do it, you know, every so often, it won't have a lasting effect. But if it's how we eat all the time, very late, heavy meals just before bed, for example, and alcohol at night, really disruptive. Your metabolic health is literally your circadian health. So if you can regulate your circadian rhythm, that will have the biggest knock-on impact to your metabolic health, I promise you. And the next thing to consider, as I've touched on a little bit as well, is under eating. And again, most women unknowingly under eat during the day. You might not necessarily be doing this on purpose. A lot of women are doing it on purpose. I see it all the time. But a lot of women are unknowingly doing it. And when we sit down and chat, they cannot believe how much they're under eating because they didn't know. And then they end up overeating in the evening because they're absolutely starving. And again, we blame lack of willpower and strength. And it's not that at all. So unknowingly not eating enough good fats throughout your day with every meal, not eating enough protein, having too many carbs then with not balanced out with protein and fats, not getting enough calories. Particularly we want to front load that. You know, we really, like I said, eat breakfast within 60 to 90 minutes of waking and then your lunch 4 to 5 hours later. And that will really prevent this overeating and craving at night. Undereating leads to a slowed metabolism, more cortisol dysregulation because it's a stressor, more muscle loss, which is already happening anyway, lower thyroid hormone output and conversion from T4 into T3, crashes in blood sugar, overeating later, issues with sleep. This is why eating less and exercising more backfires massively in perimenopause. It's just something we could get away with in our 20s, early 30s, but definitely not now. And then alcohol, unfortunately, particularly in the evening, in our 40s, we are far more sensitive to the effects of alcohol. The liver is the main organ in the body that's detoxifying your alcohol. And we just don't want to put more pressure on this organ that's already working very hard to deal with, again, the big hormonal shift, this physiological change that we're experiencing in our 40s. Alcohol hits a lot harder, I'm sure. I don't even need to tell you that because I'm sure you feel it. But alcohol affects blood sugar regulation massively. It affects our sleep massively. It dysregulates cortisol. It impacts liver function, which impacts estrogen detoxification, which impacts our, you know, hormone symptoms, particularly those estrogen-driven symptoms like worse PMS, heavy periods, painful periods, driving of fibroids and so on, breast pain. It impacts fat storage, increases fat storage, I should say, alcohol, and it has a big role in appetite regulation. So if you are someone who is using alcohol in the evenings as a way to sort of wind down and relax, I think I would just encourage you to see where you could, you know, how many evenings a week that could be reduced. And where you could maybe look at what else could help you unwind and relax in the evenings that doesn't include alcohol. Could it be that you treat yourself to a nice warm bath with a cup of herbal tea, which I appreciate is not the same as a glass of wine, but we really can surprise ourselves and get used to these things a lot quicker than we even thought we ever could, and actually start to enjoy, you know, a good book in the bath or a good book on the sofa. Is there something else we can start to enjoy in the evenings to help us to wind down? And because in our 40s, we process alcohol very differently, and even smaller amounts can stall weight loss. Gut health and inflammation, so chronic low-grade inflammation will affect insulin sensitivity, cortisol regulation, cravings, fat storage, energy, mood, and various root causes of gut health imbalances and inflammation coming from the gut could be something known as dysbiosis, which is an imbalance in the bacteria that live in our gut, also known as the gut microbiome. So we might have low levels of the friendly protective bacteria that protect the gut from inflammation and sending inflammation systemically into the body, and higher levels of the unfriendly types. And if they're allowed to grow and grow and grow and outgrow the good bacteria, we can end up with parasitic infections and just very naughty types of bacteria that start to cause issues and inflammation in the body. We can also develop food sensitivities in perimenopause, is quite common. Chronic stress, of course, I've talked about that in previous episodes. I'd encourage you to go back to episode 66, where I talked about that more. That's one just before Christmas. And chronic stress is a huge one, and it has such a big impact on our gut health. The gut and the brain are so intrinsically linked. If we are chronically stressed, the brain feels unsafe all the time. This is feeding down to our gut, and the gut is not digesting foods as well as it should, and it starts to also impact the gut lining, and it also starts to impact the balance of our bacteria there as well, and create the situation of inflammation from the gut. Poor sleep can impact gut health and create inflammation. So addressing inflammation is so important for stubborn midlife belly fat. All of these are big ones, you know. I can't just say that one of them is more important than the other. We need to look into all of them. So if I'm working with a client, for example, we're going through every single pieces of this with a fine-tooth comb to see the areas that we need to work on, the areas that are okay, the areas that just need a couple of tweaks here and there, the areas that need a big overhaul. Maybe all of them, maybe none of these areas for one person need a big overhaul, but they all just need some little tweaks and really start to get that metabolic engine back on fire and fat loss. To wrap things up, it's as I always say about empowering ourselves with knowledge. If we know the whys, then we can start to take action. If we don't understand what's going on and we just sit there feeling like we're failing, like we have no willpower, you know, then we're never going to actually achieve what we're trying to achieve. We're just going to continue battling this for many years after. Weight gain in your 40s isn't random. We are told online, on social media, there's all these various symptoms of perimenopause and we make jokes out of them and there's all these funny reels going around. And yeah, it's great to, as a community, get together and talk about our symptoms and find humor in them. But we don't just accept them. We're not just going to say, oh yeah, brain fog, it's just perimenopause. We can overcome, we can support to have far less brain fog than what people talk about. We don't just want to say, oh, we're in my 40s now, my body's changing and that's it. We can do things. We can absolutely work with it to get ourselves to a place where we're happy again and keep it that way. The key is understanding your hormones, your metabolism, your muscle mass, your stress load, your circadian rhythm, your nutrition, and so on. And then making intentional, supportive changes that align with what your body needs now, because it needs something very different now than it did in your 20s and 30s. Just understanding that will really, really take you a long way. So I hope this episode has been helpful and you've gained some golden nuggets from it that you can work with. If you want my one-to-one support with any of this or anything else in 2026, in the show notes, you'll find a link to the details of working with me one-to-one. If you would prefer to join my monthly Midlife Thrive subscription at £39 a month, where you can work your way through educational modules in your own time, it's a cancel anytime membership. Jump on a call every month with me and the other members of the membership, where we coach and answer questions and find out what's going on with you. And there's an online community as well. That link will be in the show notes as well. So whichever one feels a better fit for you, or if you want to have a chat with me about which one would be a better fit for you, then please do contact me. You can DM me on Instagram or message me, email me at francesca@francescaliparotti.com, which will also be in the show notes. Thank you for listening, and I will see you next time. Bye-bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.